Good morning, judges, opposing counsel. This is a divorce case, as you're aware. I'm David A. Helmer, attorney registration 4189, on behalf of the appellant in this case, Mrs. Cheryl McClary, who sits over to the left of the court. As you well know, this is about abuse of discretion. I believe that the judge in this case abused his discretion, most notably by taking the income of the husband and the income of the wife and coming up with it by using different methods, different logics, different standards. What he did with the husband in this particular case is he took an average of his last 3 years' income. That, to me, is acceptable. But with the wife, in this particular case, rather than taking an average, he took what he thought she should be earning if she got a job as a teacher. Remember that Mrs. McClary had not been a teacher for close to 30 years. I think it was 27. 18 years before that, she went back as a teacher's aide and then got involved becoming a paraprofessional helping special needs children, something that she loved to do. If you take what judge in the trial court did, and he averages it, which I think is, as I said, allowable, we come up with a hard number. With taking the income of the wife and speculating on what it could be in the future, and you look at throughout the transcript of the entire hearing, they use the word could or can be repeatedly. I looked the word could up in Webster's Ninth International Dictionary, one that I see that you fellows cite regularly. And could is a less forceful meaning of the word can. It could be done. Of course, she could do that, but it bears on a possibility as opposed to a process.
How was this average used?
The average was used.
This average of $40,000 a year or whatever, how is that used?
The average for the husband, what the judge did is took his average salary and his average bonuses for the past 3 years, added them up, divide by three, came up with a yearly income of $168,000 and then came up with a monthly income of $14,000 a month. Okay? And again, that's not our concern. What he did with Mrs. McClary is, because she was only making $20,000.
I understand that, counsel, but how did he use the average? I mean, assuming that he averaged it that way, how did he use the average? To determine maintenance, to determine property division?
No, for maintenance, Your Honor. Excuse me. To determine maintenance and, I believe, an award of attorney's fees. We don't know what his basis was for the award of attorney's
to
fees.
To use that income in determining the ratio for attorney's fees?
He used that income to determine whether he had an ability to pay. As far as I can tell, I don't know if he'd use the ratio or not, because what he did, the court did, is determine throughout here that if she were employed, she'd be making this much money, the $40,000 a year, and he was making the $168,000. And he based the income or the maintenance, the award of maintenance, on that. There was
which
no question.
He reduced over time, did he not? I mean, I think he originally wanted $5,000 a month, and in the first year he gave $4,000.
He gave $4,000 the first year, $3,000 the second year, $2,000 the third year, and $1,500 the fourth year.
Finding it only take, was it six credits? So within a year, he made a, isn't that not a factual finding that it could be fairly easily done and that it would be employable in Summit County Schools?
I agree that it'd be easy for her to get her license, but it is speculative to determine whether or not she's going to actually get the job. What would happen if she got her certificate? She's still working on it. But what would happen if she got that certificate and didn't get hired?
Couldn't she come back in and ask for reopen maintenance?
That's one of the things. But this is where I think the court abused its discretion the most, is he gave a limited duration of 4 years, and he declined it. And he did it in such a way that he had hard numbers for the husband, but no real numbers for the wife. There was never a contesting of the fact that she wasn't fully employed. In my opinion, and I'm asking you to consider this very, very deeply, is it's not reasonable to take one method and go to another when the other method is based upon what could happen, what possibly could be. That, to me, is speculation. It's not sound reasoning.
Counsel, let me ask you this. Did the trial court essentially find that your client was underemployed?
No, the court made no such finding whatsoever. In fact, all the evidence pointed that she was fully employed, particularly when it was brought out clearly in the testimony that it not only was her expectation, but the husband's expectation that this is what she would do. That is, she would be a paraprofessional helping special needs students. She wouldn't be a teacher.
That was the assumption or the plan during the marriage.
During the marriage, that is correct. And in fact, Mr. McCleary confirmed that. And we didn't know about the change until he got on the stand and he says, well, I think now she ought to be a teacher. That's the first time we ever heard anything about that. And that's important because for the court to use that different standard, it had to assume that she would become a teacher. And to assume that she would become a teacher ignores the expectations that were established during the marriage as to what she would do. It ignores as well the wife's clear testimony. You know, it doesn't ignore what Mr. McCleary said, I want her to now be a teacher, but it does ignore what he said that prior to me saying that, I always expected that she would be a special ed paraprofessional. I think it ignores the law, particularly if you look at the Falwell case where we talk about assumptions, because that's what I think Judge in the trial court did, is he made an assumption, which may be good for financial planning, and I'm paraphrasing from the Falwell case, but it constitutes improper speculation upon which to base future changes in maintenance. And I think that's important because I've always understood the law that when you make these awards of child support, of maintenance and attorney's fees, you do so based upon the facts known at the time of the hearing. You know, the only time you're allowed to go beyond that is if there's a definite future contingency. And again, I'm quoting from the Falwell case. And if there is a definite future contingency, you don't necessarily take it in and reduce the maintenance over time. You reserve jurisdiction in this case. I think it would have been important, particularly when you compare this case with the Yates case that I think one of you wrote. I think it was you, Judge Roth.
Don't hold me to it.
You know, that was a case of 20 years. This is a case of almost, just short of 25 years. This is a case where Mrs. McCleary is older than Mr. McCleary. She's, at the time of the hearing, she's 55. She's 57 now. She doesn't have Social Security. All she's got is PERA. And if you look at that, that had to be divided, and she only got a small amount of that PERA. And in the Yates case, you affirmed an award of permanent maintenance. And that was a case where the wife was making more than the husband at the time of the hearing.
All of this is under an abuse of discretion standard, isn't it?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Doesn't the savings clause of the statute that permits the court to revisit this solve the problem to a large extent?
As of this time, no, I don't think so, because he said this is what's going to happen. And if she can't make it, I guess she can go back in. But it would seem to me the more appropriate way to do it, and this was confirmed in that follow-all case as well, that if, in fact, there's a definite future contingency coming up, the court may reserve jurisdiction. And in the follow-all case, if you remember, it was a situation where the court actually had that what you need to do is to base maintenance on what exists at the time of the hearing, because you've got hard numbers. And we don't contest the 4,000. The 3,000 we think is minimal, but we think when we get to the third year, the 2,000, or the fourth year of 1,500, that was the abuse of discretion, particularly since it does not take in what the expectations of the were of the married, what the law is, and it doesn't factor in that for at least the third and fourth year, Miss McCleary is now going to have to deplete her assets. You know, we're not contesting the property division at 65-35, but under that, she had to go out and refinance the house. She did increase what had been a $1,318 a month mortgage payment to close to $3,000 a month, just so she could pay off Mr. McCleary, who now has that amount of cash, which he can use to pay his maintenance or do with what he wants. But the court even found, and if you look at page 162, line 22 and 23 of the trial court transcript, the judge in the trial court made it very clear that even after the division, she only had minimal assets. She's at the point now where she's getting that $3,000 a month, and she is reducing. She's dipping in and depleting her assets. And I think if you look at both the cases that I've referred to here, and as well as the case, many of the cases we cited in our briefs, that a spouse is not required to deplete her share of the marital estate in order to qualify for maintenance, in order to survive. I think the last thing I'd like to do is save some time, but I do want to emphasize not only would she be depleting her assets in order to just live, she's going to be in a situation where in at least the third and fourth year she won't be able to survive at all. And I think that's contrary to the initial intent that's expressed in our statute, 1410.114, that when you have a divorce and you're talking about maintenance, the most important thing is, because the lives of the parties have become so intertwined in the past, it's not fair, it's not reasonable to make one spouse suffer, as would happen if the court doesn't remand or hopefully reverse. I'll save just my 3 minutes here for any rebuttal. Thank you so kindly.
Judge Casebowles, nice to see you again. Judge Troy and Conley, good morning. I'm Ron Carlson, attorney registration number 19145, here on behalf of Mr. Robert McClary, the appellee. And with me at council table is our associate, Christopher Tomchuk, who participated in the trial and writing of the brief. I think Mr. Helmer has tried to, in his brief, ask the court to create some new standards on maintenance. The testimony, and in fact the exhibits, including specifically the appellant's own Exhibit C, show that her needs, according to them, was $4,010.22 a month. And Judge Ruckriegel, in his opinion, went through all of the relevant factors. And in the appellant's brief, they essentially argue that there should be a new test that you have to consider the factors equally, or somehow the judge abused his discretion by emphasizing certain factors more. I don't think that if you look at our cited case of In Re Marriage of Lee, that's at all consistent with Lee, that the statute itself says the court's supposed to consider the relevant factors. So if you consider the relevant factors, obviously there's going to be some that you consider to give more weight to and some you give less to, and that the argument that you have to give them equal weight is just not supported by either the Lee holding or by the statute itself. It's also, I think, rather illogical to say that he has to give more factors. In fact, all it really means is appellant is arguing they had wished the trial court had emphasized the factors they choose to emphasize. The judge appropriately applied the maintenance standard. He did determine her reasonable needs. And again, if you take as a starting point that she was employed as a teacher's aide and could be a teacher within taking 6 hours of class, the argument that she did not know that we were taking a position she should have some other employment is somewhat disingenuous in the fact that we had a vocational rehabilitation expert who was appropriately noticed, disclosed, report filed, and who testified that just doesn't hold up in light of the record.
Let me ask this. What was the record support for the judge's finding, explicit or implicit, not that she could get her 6 hours completed fairly easily, but that she could, in fact, get hired as a teacher in Summit County?
Mr. Arbino testified at volume 3, page 123, line 15. There were 7 openings that spring during the trial that could be applied for. And also that Mr. Arbino testified at page 120, lines 11 through 14, that the local Colorado Mountain College had the 4 classes offered that she needed in order
so
to get those.
So in terms of I understand completing the degree, that doesn't seem particularly burdensome, quite frankly, but in terms of getting hired, it was simply that there were 7 openings at that in the spring at the time of the hearing?
Correct.
Seven opening for special needs teachers?
I don't believe they were all special needs. That the program she was teaching in was not for teachers in special needs, that it would, the teaching would have been in more general, if I recall the testimony correctly. She actually, the special needs program that she's participating in is more that she's acting as a teacher's aide with special needs children, and the teaching positions were regular teaching positions.
So she would have, and her further coursework isn't special needs coursework, it's general coursework?
It's just to get her certificate back operational, that's correct. And I guess that brings us to what I think is the key argument. I believe that the appellant is asking this court to establish a different definition of appropriate employment compared to what has been employed in cases all along since the Huff case. That they're arguing that she should be able to stay as a part-time special needs teacher's aide and nothing else, that somehow being a teacher when you have a teaching certificate is not appropriate employment. And I don't think any of the cases we've cited, as well as I also, as preparation, was looking at In Re Misery, I guess it is M-I-R-I-S-E, 673 Pacific 2nd, 803, which I will appropriately supplement, a 1983 case, which talks about the idea behind maintenance is to enable a transition into the workforce. And that doesn't mean that there's no case that I find, nor case cited in their brief, that says you get to do exactly the same thing. I don't see how you argue that being a teacher when you're trained as a teacher means you have to be a specific kind of teacher's aide instead.
Let me ask you this. Would you concede that if she made her best efforts and got her certificate and then applied in Summit County and there was turned down for a job as a teacher, that she could come in and revisit the issue of maintenance?
I agree. And you know, once you have the maintenance award, it's always modifiable. They can come back in. But if, I don't know, I have to go look, my partner tried the case, but I don't know if the deposition was used. But when I took her deposition, the whole issue was she really didn't want to go look for work other than what she was doing. You know, she's working part-time. She was doing something she liked with special needs kid. It wasn't teaching. She didn't have the responsibility of being a teacher as a full-time job, and she had summers off. And she just really didn't want to do any more than that was the issue.
Well, she was a full-time job at the time of the hearing, my understanding.
I would have to let the record speak. My recollection was she was part-time, but I don't, you know, the record is what it is. I'm not really adequately prepared to answer that, I guess. But in any event, I think there is the remedy. If in the second, or rather in the third and fourth year, it's not adequate, sure, they can come back. But again, what Judge Regal did is he awarded her complete needs with a $4,000 award for the first year. She didn't have to work at all. She could go anywhere and be a student and get the classes she needed. In the second year,
But she had to work.
I'm sorry?
She had to work because that's the other part of her living income, is working plus the maintenance.
He factored in the $20,000, did he not, in terms of determining her needs?
No, I mean, he awarded $4,000 the first year, is my recollection, and their Exhibit C says her total needs were $4,000.
Well, so based on the assumption, I thought that she had a $20,000 income from her current job. He didn't say you don't have to work, I don't believe, and you can live on the, as I recall.
No, he didn't say she didn't have to, but my understanding of the numbers is she could have not worked for a year, because if Exhibit C says her total needs are $4,000, a month, 4,010, and the maintenance award was for 4,000 in the first year.
I guess my point is, and I think Judge Roy's question, I thought that needs was based on the assumption that she was going to continue to earn the $20,000 salary.
Correct. Okay. Correct. And the rest of it from there follows. But I'm just saying, for the first year, if she worked, if she went to CMC part-time and continued to work, she would have 17,000 above her needs to put away or whatever. The second year, the maintenance would, with her salary, meet her needs. And by the third year, it means she should have gotten a better job by the third year.
Now, counsel, is it correct that you didn't contend that she was underemployed? Rather, you simply said appropriate employment as a factor would lead the conclusion, to the conclusion that she could make more.
Yes, there's no finding that she was underemployed at the time.
So then, is it permissible to take what could be made as opposed to, I mean, if there's a finding of underemployment, for example, if I'm an attorney and I'm employed as a gardener, obviously a court could say I'm underemployed and impute income to me, right?
Correct.
But that wasn't done here. So under what analysis can the court do the same thing without a contention of underemployment?
Well, again, I think I've always conceptualized the underemployment argument we most often encounter in child support as opposed to maintenance. What both Huff and the cases we've cited have said is that maintenance is to allow the transition back into the workforce, and the judge provided under that analysis that she could be able to support herself and meet her reasonable needs by upgrading to being a teacher. So I think he did it under her ability to meet her reasonable needs. And again, I think the Misery case I was talking about, it refers to trying to make someone able to support themselves through appropriate employment training and education, and that there's supposed to be an award only if there's no other feasible means, and the judge was looking at other feasible means that she could meet her needs.
In the long term, though, this is a train wreck going to happen. It's going somewhere to happen, is
well,
it
not? No, it's not.
Because
I mean,
she's entering the workforce late in life. She's got only a few years, no Social Security, only PERA, which is $13 billion short today. That the long road is grim.
We're equally speculating on both. I think the issue is that she's taught in the Summit schools all these years. She has all these friends in the Summit schools. The testimony was that everyone said she did a great job with the kids, with appropriate training. There's these openings in the Summit schools, and why can't she get a job locally and support herself? I think that what you're being asked to do is to turn or create a new standard that has not been enunciated in any other case, that when you look at someone at the time you're awarding maintenance, that you have to allow them to continue to work as they are permanently and provide them maintenance to make up the difference permanently without
well,
ever changing
that argument. I'm just saying that long term this is a grim picture.
I have to disagree. I mean, first of all, up in the mountains we have lots of turnover all the time. There's openings every year, and I actually think she will be able to get a job in Summit schools, especially given the testimony about how everyone thought what a wonderful job she did.
And one of the reasons you have high turnover is probably because it's very expensive to live in Summit County.
Right, and she had a house. She got the house out of the divorce. I mean, she got 65% of the assets in the divorce. So compared to the usual 20-something teacher who shows up who has to try and find a place to live and make a living and all that, and what a beginning teacher, she is already established by how the court provided for her in terms of assets out of the marriage. And then I guess finally, briefly on attorney's fees, the judge made reference to all of his other findings, and he essentially flipped the number on his head, said our client should pay 65% of the attorney's fees. I think that's well within reason.
He pays 65% of the total attorney's fees.
Correct.
She pays 35%. That's based on current incomes or projected incomes?
That was based on their current incomes. And the judge's findings simply recite in light of his division of property and the award of maintenance, and therefore that was his attorney's fee award. So. Thank you.
I guess my biggest concern is what Mr. Carlson just argued is he thinks she would be able to get a job. that's basically what the trial court judge is. He says, I think she should be able to get a job. But that's why we have the law that's developed over so many years, that you make your decision about maintenance at the time the hearing is held, because we know what she has and knows what she doesn't have. It's important, and Judge Ruckriegel made this very clear, that even though there were seven openings that spring for the 2007-2008 year, he said, I wouldn't force her to even apply for a job. There's not enough time. This hearing was done in the middle of the summer in 2007. She couldn't get a job for 2007. I think that's perhaps
why she wasn't qualified for the job, at least at that
time. At that time, she was not.
That's why she got about 100% maintenance for that year, though.
I would agree. It was close to that, and perhaps that's what the judge did. The opposing counsel would say that we're trying to create new standards. We're not trying to create new standards. At worst, the word that the trial court judge put the wrong emphasis or didn't consider them equally, that might have been appropriately. What I was trying to convey, and in my argument I'm trying to convey, is that if you have the standards, and yes, the trial court judge did apply all the standards, but when you apply any one of the standards, you have to apply it in a logical, sound, appropriate way. By taking the standard, what is the ability of Mr. McCleary to pay based upon what he's earned in the past, and what is the ability and the future earning capacity of Mrs. McCleary, you got to base it upon what exists at the time, not what it could happen in the future. And that, I think,
he didn't project the husband's income.
No, he did not project.
He increased it some.
No, he kept
5% a year.
No, he didn't do that.
He just took the income and
the average. And hopefully, you'd think that everybody would do better. But I think it's important, even though the argument could be made that maintenance is always modifiable, and if it's not appropriate, she can come back in and do it. That's not what the law requires. You base it upon what exists at the time. And she should have gotten $4,000 a month for permanent basis, with the court reserving jurisdiction under Colorado Revised Statutes 1410-122. And when there was a substantial and continuing change, that they could be addressed at that time. It has to do with who has the burden of proof as well. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. Opposing counsel would say we're trying to come up with a different definition of appropriate employment. The issue of employment, appropriate employment, was never raised. It was never argued. That's why the judge, I believe, did not make any finding. He did not find, they did not argue, that she was underemployed. She was employed full time, not as a teacher's aide, but as a paraprofessional with specific training and specific qualifications to train special needs children. That's what she wanted to do all of her life. That's what she loved doing. And that's what the parties agreed that she would do throughout the rest of their life. And it got changed. Thank you again so kindly.
Thank you both for your arguments. Today, the case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course. That completes our docket for the day. The court will be in recess. The bailiff will be so announced.